Blog Talk Radio.
There's some dangerous large carnivore out there.
Yeah, I saw that bird kick a young deer off the road and fly away.
And it was just about getting dark, and we started panicking, running down the bridge, not really having any clue what was throwing rocks in our vicinity, good-sized rocks. And I stopped long enough to get a 357 out of my backpack and look back, and that's when I thought I saw one.
For a week, the town of Defiance was being harassed by a werewolf. And it's actually attacked two railroad workers, killed livestock. You know, just a lot of weird stuff that was going on.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Monster X Radio. Sunday, August 17th, 2014. I'm your host, Johnny Bigfoot, and with me tonight are my co-hosts, Sasquatch Coffee founder Gunnar Monson and Crystal. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Howdy, I made it.
Tonight we will be doing a Monster X first. We will be giving away two prizes. One of our guest books, as well as one of his T-shirts. So be sure to log into the chat room to be added to the drawing, which we'll do after the break at the top of the hour. Well, let's dig into some Bigfoot news. What is happening in the Bigfoot world?
Well, I just got done sending Hopsquatch, and our upcoming guest, Stacy Brown, was the presenter today, so that was awesome.
Oh, cool. Stacy flew out to speak.
Yeah, he's been doing like a West Coast tour. I think he went up and visited John and Sarah Brown's research area up in Washington, and where they got that thermal. And
again, huh?
Yeah, yep.
He was just up there, I think, not too long ago.
Yep. John and Sarah were here today, along with Derek Randles and Shane Corson, who used to be on Monster X Radio.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So it was a good crowd tonight?
Yeah, there's probably 50 people today, and it's with 80-degree weather in Portland, so.
Sweet.
Doesn't happen a lot.
Did you guys hear Megan Fox admitted she believed in Bigfoot?
Yeah, and UFOs and ghosts. I saw something where she said she believes in everything.
Yeah.
So I don't know that that's really compelling, so I don't know if she believes in fairies and leprechauns and unicorns, but I did find out today that a group of unicorns is called a blessing.
Uh-huh.
So.
It would be.
Yeah, you know, she was interviewed by MTV News for this one. She had just recently been interviewed at that Crypticon or Comic-Con festival.
Right.
Where she said she believed in Bigfoot, and now, yeah, she says she believes in everything now. And she had a tone to her voice. She was snippy, you know. You could tell she was ready to be somewhat mocked in the interview.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, if Megan, if you're listening and you really want to go out Bigfooting, seriously, give me a call. You know where to find me.
Yep.
I'm sure she's listening. And she was. She was ready. She had her pointer finger cocked and loaded because that guy was giggling at her, and she did not like it.
Yeah, well, that's the way the media seems to handle, Bigfoot as a topic for the most part.
I was surprised at the level that they knew of Bigfoot. I'm under the impression that people aren't as aware of what's being told about Bigfoot, and they both seemed pretty up as far as what things are thought to be. She thinks there's a bipedal primate. He's aware of the fact that there is, as of yet, zero proof of that. So I was surprised by that anyway.
Well, I argue the fact that there's no proof, but that's a debate for another time.
We'll have to do a show.
And
because it is.
Did you hear there is
a...
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Crystal.
No, I was just going to say that there is a fine line between what those consider proof and others do not accept as proof. So.
Right. Well, we were just having that discussion. My team, the Film Force Research Group, was out. This morning we woke up in our research area and we recorded some more weird, this project basically started 2 years ago. And the guys that went up there first, Larry and Mark, recorded some audio going back and forth. And we got identical audio, and if you were, we haven't analyzed it yet, but we want to compare it to because one of our projects is to try and, because we're getting a lot of audio stuff, and to develop voice prints, so if we could identify different entities by their voice print, so.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Did you hear about the petition to protect Sasquatch as an endangered species has been started on change.org?
No, but I'm signing it in right now.
By Peter Weimer of New York.
Say what? What was that name again? Don't say that three times fast. I know we have a congressman? What was he? Just had an unfortunate last name of Weiner.
Yeah, I think that's kind of an interesting petition because, I mean, I guess you have to have proof of a species before you can protect it?
I would think that to enact the law, they had a law in the books up in Washington where it was illegal to kill a Sasquatch.
And that was just, a just-in-case law.
Right. It wasn't, because obviously there wasn't proof positive that they exist. So, but they did make a law.
I guess that would be the state to make one in.
Yeah.
That in Oregon.
California. Probably the only state that wouldn't really need that law would be Hawaii. Then that'd just be silly.
And did you hear about the Falcon Project may finally get off the ground?
No.
Pun intended.
Did they?
They haven't.
You know that big...
There was somebody didn't somebody step forward with some with possible funding?
Yep. In case you're not familiar with that, it's that big blimpy-looking airship that William Barnes and Jeff Meldrum want to fly across America to look for Bigfoot in. And apparently they did get $250,000 from a mystery benefactor, and they expect liftoff in 3 to 5 months.
That's awesome, I guess. I mean, you know, I don't know how it's going to be operated. We were just looking at a really cool military, you know, device that, and I can't even remember what it's called, but, you know, if we could get that, we probably could fly over dense forest and see what's on the ground, I guess. So I'm going to look into that more. I don't think it's in my budget.
Interesting. Yeah, it sounds like a pretty good thing. I mean, it's something new, innovative. I mean, it's been almost 50 years since the Patterson-Gimlin film. I think we're due for something different.
Well, you know, the Browns got that thermal. Now, the Browns, I think, you know, Stacy Brown as well as John and Sarah Brown up in Washington got some pretty compelling thermal images. But it still comes down to, we were talking, like, how many thousands, hundreds or thousands of hours now have people been out into the woods now with, you know, with thermal image, and we still barely have anything. It's still a needle in a haystack kind of. I think some people mistakenly think that thermal is like X-ray vision, and like it's not, you know, this means if something is behind a bush, you can't see it with the thermal. So then there were iPhones coming out with this FLIR attachment for like $400. That should be interesting.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that will be cool.
I wonder if that will up our thermal footage.
It should. You know, there looks like a lot of uses for that thing besides squatching, so those would be pretty popular.
I think that's the market that you know, Apple needs to, and FLIR needs to tap, is the FLIR for squatching. The squatcher. They could come up with the Finding Bigfoot, or even better, the Monster X version of FLIR. And we'll test it for you, so.
Yep.
Get a hold of Johnny.
You're listening.
Yeah.
No FLIR. Megan Fox, you probably need somebody at FLIR.
And,
or they can get your phone call.
We got a couple new monster shows premiering this Friday. Mm-hmm. Monsters Underground. With Bill Brock.
Yep, I heard of
leading
that.
Leading the team. And Swamp Monsters. Both on
so
Destination America.
So now they're going to divvy up the... It's kind of like when they started out with CSI, and now there's, you know, and there was CSI Miami and CSI. Now it's going to be Monsters in the Air, Monsters everywhere.
Monsters everywhere.
Closet monsters.
The closet monsters.
That's my idea,
nice.
By the way, to use that. You heard it here first.
Yep, I'd run with that.
So I suppose Mountain Monsters is coming to an end, so they got to start these new shows.
Well, they're talking about final season of Finding Bigfoot. So, Finding Bigfoot has proved that there's a market for Bigfoot television.
Very true.
There are people who think that televised Bigfoot shows damage the field. I don't personally know how.
I'll tell you one thing.
I mean,
I don't think I'd be talking about this right now if it wasn't for Finding Bigfoot.
Right, yeah. Finding Bigfoot broke some ground.
I mean, I've always was into this stuff, but that's what really got me into the online aspect of it.
Yeah.
And I went into their group and looked around, and then this group, and you know, before you know it, I was into a lot of stuff. Well, I am bored of the show, but
oh yeah, I can't. I did not watch the 2-hour finale. I don't think I've watched the last maybe season or two. I run it in the background. Oh. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean whatever bad way you can take it, I guess. I just can't.
In the first season, I said to myself, it's like this, you know, this format cannot go on forever. It's going to play out. But was this their fifth season? You know, so, and there's some value. I've had, you know, people start running down, finding Bigfoot. Like it's at the very least, it's raised awareness, and it's a great show for kids to watch.
I was just going to say it scares my kids. I can't even watch it. It scares them. the Bigfoot that they portray is scary.
But a lot of little kids like that show, and have gotten, you know, that was their, when I was a kid, part of how I got into Bigfoot was like In Search Of, and, you know, and there was Bigfoot shows and John Green's books. And so, finding Bigfoot has kind of become this generation's In Search Of. Just focused on one topic.
Yeah, and it is. I would have been all over finding Bigfoot when I was younger. The littler kids are afraid, but the older kids, they will sit and watch, and you know, they find it interesting, and they know I have an interest in the subject. But while I'm not watching the show, they will ask me, "Is Bigfoot real?" And I'm like, "I don't know." I can't answer that for you. I'm sorry.
So in terms of percentage, like how leaning are you, Crystal, to the possibility or that there is a Bigfoot?
I leave open a possibility that there is a Bigfoot. I don't have a percentage. Oh, gosh, that could change day to day.
Right.
and that's based on influence from visiting the online community. So if I were to not visit the online community and stick strictly to maybe books or just articles that I do find online that aren't from the community, I would probably I don't know. I don't know that I would still be swayed. I guess it would have to, I don't know. It's really hard to say. It kind of makes you bitter, and it doesn't make you think that there isn't a such thing. It just makes you almost hope that there's not.
Well, I think Bigfoot doesn't care what we think. Pretty sure we have this debate about whether or not, you know, we need to prove Bigfoot to protect. Bigfoot doesn't really give a rip if we prove them or not, I'm pretty sure.
I could definitely say I'm not in line for proving them. I don't, if there is a such thing, I mean, I guess people do want proof, but as far as protection, yeah, like you're saying, what the hell do they need us for if there is a such thing? Obviously, they're doing quite fine on their own.
Well, I hear the argument that, you know, well, the woods are shrinking, and man, go out in the woods. I mean, at some point we might be where we're encroaching and threatening their territory, and we need to protect it. But if that's the case, we should be doing it now for bears and cougars.
Existing animals. Right. I don't like whenever people take on or take up cause for Bigfoot and ignoring everything else in the free world that is actually proven to exist at this moment and pretending like that doesn't care. It doesn't matter, and that's humans included. There are people who strictly and solely seem like they only care about Bigfoot, and that's really weird and odd and strange for me.
Especially when they're kind of, I'm trying to temper my language, when they're not very pleasant people to human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there are people who say that they have these wonderful relationships with these family groups of Bigfoot people, and that seems all fine and good to me, and they say that they're able to achieve these relationships because they are pure of heart people, and in the same breath, they will call you things that I won't say. Well, I will say them, but I won't say it right now.
Just to be clear.
You're right. Yeah, I'll say it, but I'm not going to say it right now. And, and you know, it's not even a matter of disbelief. It's hard to find a place to fit. Not that my idea is to fit in, but, you know, it's hard to find a place where you have, you know, decent conversations concerning the subject, because there are none, zero. Finding that is just as hard, if not harder, than finding Bigfoot. I think I'd be better off in the woods on my own looking for Bigfoot rather than trying to find decent discussion concerning the subject.
Well, that's one of the things, like, we're really fortunate that guy Edwards has started this Hopswatch deal in Portland. I mean, it's an eclectic, it's not electric, sometimes electric, group of people and there's all kinds of, you know, people coming from different angles at it. And I've talked to a lot of them about this, I've not had any, you know, paranormal, quote unquote, experiences, and but I know several people that claim to have. Part of the discussion with my group this weekend was like, you know, it's only what you can prove. I mean, I think that has to be part of the record because people are recording it. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it personally because it's impossible to prove. We can't even prove that a physical being exists.
Right.
Or we
Very
haven't
good point.
At this point. The other discussion that we're having today is like people coming together versus my thing is collaboration, not competition. And like our group is working with the Olympic Project, with some other Bigfoot groups. We share information with John and Sarah Brown, and we're finding some commonalities between. I think part of the reason that we're still looking is the fragmentation within the subject. You got all these little groups of people going out doing this. You know, there's no standardization of procedures. There's not a lot of sharing of information, either because of ego or because of lack of contact, not knowing who to get a hold with. You know, so any Bigfooters out there that do want to, you know, connect and share information and build database and that, if you want to get a hold of me, we're reaching out to other groups because we're finding a lot of commonalities. All we really have right now is audio, so we're finding, but it's some very interesting audio, and people that we've shared it with are say, well, yeah, we have the same thing in our area, so it's good because otherwise, everybody's starting from ground zero. You know, you go out and start Bigfooting. First of all, it's really easy to go out and have a glorified camping trip and have a Bigfoot experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then even if you record audio or find footprints or what do you do with it, I wonder how many people have Bigfoot casts, you know, in their closet, garage, that nobody else has ever seen, or they just didn't know what to do with it when they, you know, we have pristine... If somebody found a body, I think maybe they'd have an idea. But that could get screwed up really easy, too, so.
Some Bigfoot protocol.
Our group has some standard operating procedures and protocols, one of them being called the Gunner Protocol, because on two occasions I erased audio that had some really cool stuff on it. So I got fired from the group and rehired. So it happens all the time. We all get fired and rehired.
Okay. when I was messing with my trail camera when I first got it, I think I put it out twice without turning it on. It was only, well, that's, you know, that's trial and error. And then, but whenever I did actually put it out in the woods and not in my backyard, I knew that I better make sure it's turned on.
It's good to test things before we go out.
Yeah.
And have backups. The first time I went out to our research area, we had some epic stuff happen with howling and hooting, all kinds of, for like 2 hours. And it was the first time I'd met the two people that I was out with, and one of them had a brand new TAS cam and put it up, and all this stuff. It was really cool, and we went and got it in the morning, and he didn't know how to use it, and it didn't. We didn't record any. It recorded for a second. And both the other person that was there and myself had recorders and didn't even turn them on. We were so impressed with his. So backup is always good. Now, this weekend, Friday night we had 6 audio devices out. So, that's great. The downside of that is now we have about 60 hours worth of audio to go through.
Yeah.
But we've got one of our team members that is really dedicated to going through audio, and we have David Ellis of the Olympic Project. Also, we go through it. We send stuff to him. He goes through it, and that guy's a freaking machine. I mean, I've sent him up, 18 hours of audio, and the next day he's like, "You got some stuff that like, how'd you do that?" Like Superman. I don't know if he has super hearing, that he can hear really fast. I don't know.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Very nice.
But that's also a benefit to collaborating with other groups. You find people that have been doing it longer than you, have made the mistakes already. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of competition. And I don't understand why. If there is anything to get done, they're not going to get it done going at the rate they're going. I don't understand why people wouldn't want to collaborate and try to figure things out. A lot of people don't like each other.
Well, and that some people want to be, the person, they want to be the one to solve it. And I think the way to solve it is working together, not fighting with each other. And we've had a little bit of infighting, but that's, and if you guys better be listening, because it's me on the radio, so we can spend time, arguing with each other or doing Bigfoot research, and one is productive and one is not. So.
Very good. Sounds like you had a good weekend.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We actually, one of our team members is like off the chart cook, camp cook, and he actually did a Kahlua pork roast and buried the thing in the ground and cooked it for 8 hours yesterday. So, so if you ever really want to like up your Bigfoot cuisine experience, you should get a hold of us and go out with us. And Chef Larry will amaze you.
Nice. Well, for all the news stories we spoke of and more, you can visit the Bigfoot Research News blog. And I'd also just like to thank Sasquatch Coffee for being our proud sponsor here at Monster X Radio.
Thank you, Sasquatch Coffee. By the way,
have you tried it, Yeti?
Deal. Right now, if you spend $45 on the website, you get a free Feeling Squatchy T-shirt. So go to the Facebook page, grab the deal, go over to the website, get your coffee, maybe a mug, and get a free T-shirt.
Very cool. And that offer ends August 31st, correct?
That is correct.
Nice. Well, our guest had something he had to do today, so we're going to have to call him. but I'll tell you a little bit about him here before we call him and get him on air. He's from Florida. He's the author of the book Legend Tripping. Him and his family call themselves Legend Trippers. Together they go out looking for cryptozoological monsters such as Bigfoot, Nessie, Mothman. They also look for UFOs, ghosts, and lost treasures. He's also been very active lately searching for the elusive skunk ape in the Florida swamps with the Florida Bigfoot investigators. I know he's done some collaborations with Stacey Brown, Kevin Keel, Tim Fasano. He's all over the place. And
please
we're going
to
give him a call.
Please enjoy this ride and ring back tone while your party is reached.
Hello?
Robert Robinson.
Hello?
Welcome
yeah.
to the show.
Hey, thank you.
How's it going, buddy?
Okay, we're on our way back from Panama City, heading down to back to where I live.
Okay.
We had to attend a funeral. My brother-in-law died. God rest his soul.
Oh,
and
sorry.
Yeah, we are too. Me and him were really, really good friends and really tight. And it was he died to cancer. He was battling it for about over a year, and it unfortunately it finally won its battle over him. So,
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's when I guess, as this expression goes, it's one of those things, you know?
Right.
Very good. Well, I was just mentioned a little bit about you, and I guess you could say your cryptozoological credentials.
Oh, yeah, that. That's actually more of my, out of all the legend tripping things that I do, I kind of enjoy the monster hunting aspect more. My wife, she's a paranormal, and that's kind of
okay.
why we call ourselves legend trippers, because she's more of the paranormal, I'm more the monster hunters, but we both go out with each other and do this stuff. So we decided instead of just, you know, get ourselves listed as monster hunters or ghost hunters, I said, let's just go with legend trippers, and that way, you know, we could also go UFO hunting and all kinds of other things.
That's neat.
Cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was the whole basis of my book, you know.
Where'd you come up with the concept of legend tripping?
I've actually saw another book, and unfortunately I can't remember the gentleman's name. He's one of the producers on Ghost Adventures. He wrote a book about, So You Want to Go Legend Tripping. And I picked it up, and I said, whoa, and I showed the wife. I said, this is kind of fits into art. And then I did a little research on it. Legend tripping itself actually takes its more its definition on back in the day when, you know, you were a teenager and you heard of a local legend, you get your friends together, like say you hear there was a weird creature seen at Lover's Lane, you'd get some friends and you'd go out there and check it out to see if you could see it. Or if you heard it was a ghost walking around railroad tracks. And, you know, that's kind of how it, you know, was originally perceived. And, of course, it also had a bad reputation where kids were, you know, breaking into houses to do ghost hunts and stuff. And so it didn't have a very good rep. But, you know, reading on it and stuff, and I said, you know, I was one of those teenagers that used to go do all that stuff. But, you know, now that I'm grown up, I still want to go do it. So why does it have to be just a teenager thing, you know?
Right.
Yeah, that's
so,
awesome.
You know,
I
it's
like
just
the idea
like
of legend tripping.
Yeah, I was doing a presentation on the skunk ape. That's Florida's version of Bigfoot. And one of the person kind of when I did the questions part of the end of the presentation, he kept going on to the fact, you know, pinging on the fact that I went out with my family to do this. And he said, you know, I can't get my son to go out and go camping and stuff like that because he's into these video games and he doesn't want to come out and do this stuff. I said, you know, because I go camping, I go fishing and all this stuff. And I said, well, next time you go out, you know, approach him and don't say, hey, son, let's go camping. I said, let's go on a Bigfoot hunt. and see what happens then. I said, now you've turned a camping trip into an adventure. And but I said, if you go out there, you really got to go Bigfoot, honey. You can't, you know, because then you'll look like a liar if you don't go out and do that stuff. And he said, no, no, I'm interested in that stuff. I said, well, take him on a Bigfoot hunt. And he wrote me back, and he says, you know, it works. I mean, now my son comes out with me, and we're, you know, we're checking out different areas to go Bigfoot hunting, and, you know, we go look for him at night, and we go fishing in the daytime, and we're having a great time.
Sweet. Get the family out for some fun and mystery, and, you know, and some exercise on top of it.
Well, I guess it gets kids out of the house, gets them away from video games, and, I mean, you know, with TV shows like Finding Bigfoot and Mountain Monsters and Ghost Adventures and Ghost Hunters, I mean, the kids, they know all about that stuff. And a lot of them, you know, deep down, they like to go out and take a look for it. You know, and what better time to do it than with your family?
Heck yeah. So when did you come out with the book?
The book came out January of this year. It took me about, well over a year to do it. I had a friend of mine, Lyle Blackburn, author of The Beast of Boggy Creek and The Lizard Man. He kind of, you know, kind of coached me on it. You know, I sent the book to him. I had him look it for. And the first thing, kind of, I don't know what, I knew what I wanted to write, but it didn't quite, it wasn't going in the direction I wanted it to. But then when I got it to the publisher and the editor, it finally started taking shape. And it started turning into more of what I wanted to do. It's a guidebook. It's a guidebook on how to go out and conduct a real adventure and go look for Bigfoot or a ghost hunt or look for UFOs or go look for buried treasure.
Sounds awesome.
Well, like I said, it's to be honest with you, it's got more of a, probably more of the Bigfoot aspect or monster hunting aspect than it does anything else, because it has a lot with the other things. Monster hunting encompasses a little bit more, especially when, you know, you're going out with your family, your kids. You've got to take a couple things into consideration, like, you know, safety and, you know, a little bit more prepping and, you know, make sure your kids, you know, you got to get them, you know, used to what's going on. I mean, when I used to take our kids out, I used to make sure that every one of them had what I call a safety necklace. So, I mean, we would go walk the area in the daytime, and that way they knew exactly where we were going to be at when we went out at night. But if any of them had got, you know, separated or anything, they knew to stop where they were at. And the safety necklace had a whistle and a flashlight. And I told them to go ahead and just start blowing on that flashlight. I mean, blowing on that flashlight. Just start blowing on that whistle and just start using the flashlight. So.
Nice. I guess we're getting a little bit of an echo. Oh, you said you're in your car, so I was going to say maybe you had your speakers
yeah.
on, but. Oh, we're
yeah, I think it makes hold on. How's that? I had the windshield wipers going on. Was that it?
No. Yeah, it is what it is. Someone just mentioned it in the chat room. I could hear a little bit. It's not too bad.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, yeah, it's common. So I see you're going to be one of the speakers at the first annual Skunk Ape Conference in Orlando next month with...
Yes,
Tim
yes
Pistano,
I am. I'm excited about it. Yes. I went out on an expedition with Stacy and David Lauer, and I tell you, one of the nights we were out there, you know, Stacy's got one of those thermal imagers, which, God, I wish I owned one of those, and I saw something standing erect one night. We were out till like 4 o'clock in the morning, and one of the girls we had with us did a call blast, a scream. And not more than a few minutes later, I took the thermal, and there was something standing in this field right in front of us. And I handed the goggles to Stacy, and I guess the thing took off by the time I handed him the goggles. But I tell you, that was a pretty exciting night.
Wow, cool. So have you been working with those guys for a while?
No, not too long. About almost a year.
Okay. That's good guys to work with.
Seem oh, they're great.
Be out in the field a lot. And
oh, yes, they do.
I've seen a couple videos with you with Tim and Kevin, and you seem like a great addition to their team.
Oh, I tell you, they're something else. I mean, they are doers. They don't sit around and talk about it. They go out and do it. So, great bunch of guys to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems you got that. Your background seems to complement them well.
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't know it, but Florida actually is, you know, it's tied with California with being the, you know, the number two sightings of Bigfoot in the United States.
The one?
A lot of people, you know, think it's, well, I mean, I think Oregon or Washington State has the number one, the most amount of sightings. And then California, but we were, you know, Florida for a while, I got to look the numbers up again, and I might be wrong, but for a while, Florida was tied with California with the amount of Bigfoot sightings.
Yeah, I know it's a big state for the sightings. I mean, it has a lot of people, too, so that's one correlation I noticed, that high population states have high numbers of sightings. Except for Oregon was a low population state but had a high amount of sightings.
Mm-hmm.
You need
a lot of skunk apes.
Yeah, you need habitat, you need people to see them, and then you need them to be seen. So,
well, here in Florida, we still have quite a bit of area that still hasn't been, believe it or not, it's still not been explored by man. It's still a swampy area and stuff. In fact, some of the Everglades, if it hasn't been properly explored.
Oh, I believe that. Those swamps are scary.
Yes, they are. You can get lost out there real easy.
Do you wear any sort of boots, or how do you guys prepare for, like, snakes and stuff?
Well, for the most part, if I know I'm going in, I do have snake boots. Because, you know, we do have a snake, we have rattlesnakes, we have the pygmy rattlesnake, and we have cottonmouth or water moccasins down here. But for the most part, I just wear, you know, high-top hiking boots. And, you know, a lot of times, I, you know, especially at night, I just keep on the main trails when I'm walking around. If I do find an area that we need to get back in, I do keep my snake boots in the car with me if I do need to put them on.
Yeah, I lived in South Georgia for a couple of years, and I was always wondering why there wasn't kids, you know, playing out in some of these areas. And I think there's a reason. Gators, snakes, spiders. A lot of stuff that can get you. A lot of undeveloped stuff, like you said, down there. And how many people walk through the Everglades? You know, not too many. I mean, you get some people out in those boats and stuff, but.
Well, it's weird. Our the deer up north are a lot bigger than the deer down here in Florida, but our snakes are bigger down here than they are up north.
Yeah, and they're actually poisonous.
Oh yeah, we got some yeah. But the good thing about the rattlesnake is it does let you know it's coming up. The pygmy rattle, it's starting to lose its rattle, so you got to be careful of that. And those little suckers coil up right in the middle of these dirt roads that we go walking around. I mean, we ran into about two trips ago. I walked right up on one. I had my walking stick with me, thank goodness, and I was sitting there, and I looked down and saw it coiled up. I went, oh, there's one right there.
Wow.
Skunk apes would deal with walking around in bare feet with all those snakes running around.
Well, I think, to be honest with you, I think these animals are, you know, as far as the skunk ape, I think it's just pretty aware of its surroundings. I mean, you know, not only does it's got snakes to contend with, it's got alligators and panthers and bear. So, I mean, this animal obviously is, you know, very, you know, in tune with what's going on in its environment. So, you know, it's like, you know, gorillas up, you know, in Africa and stuff, you know. I'm sure they're, you know, they got things that they have to contend with, like, the, you know, like the skunk ape does down here in Florida.
Right, plus there's the apex, they're at the top of the food chain.
Well, like I said, you know, whenever we've had a couple of situations, we notice that there's nothing in the area when, you know, we have one of these animals that we think might be out there. You know, we don't hear anything. It was like dead quiet.
Yeah, we've noticed a lot of, I mean, how unusually quiet it is when we have activity, too. It's weird.
Everything shuts up when the skunk ape's in town.
Yeah, that's kind of what we joke about it, you know. We said, holy cow, it's dead quiet. You know, now we all try to sniff the air to see if we can smell one of them. But unfortunately, you know, and Scott Marlowe put a theory out that the animal only does this during, you know, the mating season, which, you know, it does have some merit to it. Because, you know, there's been a couple times when I've had, you know, people told me about some sighting, and I said, did you smell anything? And they said, no, we didn't smell anything. So, you know, I don't think these animals actually give off a smell all the time.
I think that's true, or else every report would have some element of the strong odor that some people do report.
Because, you know, the sex pheromones, and I'm going to use the gorilla. Sex pheromones, the male sweats them out, whereas the female, it comes out in her urine. That's, of course, why people get, you know, you get these guys who get these pheromone chips. They get them dipped in female ape urine, because that's, you know.
There's a cottage market for you.
I hate to be the poor sap who has to go get those things made, chasing around these female gorillas trying to get them to piss on a little chip.
I imagine there's a factory in China where the children dip them. Right next to the famous shoe manufacturer, who will remain nameless.
Now, do you think the skunk ape is a different species than, the Pacific Northwest Bigfoot?
No, again, this is my theory and my theory alone. I think the animals are all basically the same. I just think that, you know, like, you know, with Homo sapiens, we have, you know, African Americans, Caucasians, Orientals. I think with this animal, again, we're just seeing a different,
regional. It's a regional thing?
Yes. Like, I mean, the skunk ape here, believe it or not, up near the Panhandle, Panama, where Stacy Brown does a lot of his research, the animal does seem to be about 8 to 10 feet tall, whereas down in the, my neck of the woods, the central Florida and down in the Everglades, the animal seems to be smaller, not as quite as tall.
Yeah, I was under the impression that the skunk ape was smaller and had a little bit different look.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
I
it does seem to be in lighter skin, and I maybe that's the fact that it's in the swamp area and stuff. But, you know, up in the Panhandle, it's just like being in Georgia or in Alabama, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Stacy's video that he took of this animal was, I mean, he took me and my wife out to that location where he took it, and I went and I stood where that animal was supposed to be, and I did the little walk, and my wife took a video of it, and you can clearly see that whatever that thing was a lot taller than I was, and I mean, I'm 5'7", and this thing was about, about
4 or
5 feet higher than me. So, you know, they're obviously, like, I mean, again, this is my opinion, that they're a lot taller up northern Florida than they are down in the south. And, maybe that's, like I said, the whole thing with the deer. The deer are smaller down south than they are up north.
Interesting. Yeah, I think Florida's a ripe state for research.
Presentation about the video, and I think they in the recreation, the figure in the video was 8 feet 4, and you know, Finding Bigfoot went down there and did a recreation, and Bobo, it dwarfed Bobo, so, and he's a big dude.
Well, Well, I was at the area. I've looked at it, and I think Stacy saw a real Bigfoot. I think he got a real Bigfoot on the camera. Now, again, that's my opinion, and I mean, I've been at the area looking at it, going out with him and stuff, and I think it's real. I think it's legit.
Nice. Yeah. When I talked to Stacy last, he brought up, I guess, a theory that he thought the Bigfoots, you know, came over the land bridge way back when, and that's why there is more concentrated in the Pacific Northwest, and they kind of get less and less as you go across the country. And he acted like there, you know, might not be that many in Florida. Like, I think he said a real small number is what he was thinking, but nonetheless, you guys do get a lot of sightings, and you have some very viable habitat there.
Well, I think with the way man is encroaching more into the swamps and building, you know, more structures and all, and it's pushing animals, I mean, and the way the global warming going, yeah, I've often thought that maybe the animal might, and I hate to say it, might be dying out.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that.
I hope
I'm
not true on that, but it's just kind of looking that way.
It's just, there's isolation now. Like, take Minnesota, for example. We have three biomes. We have the prairie, the deciduous, and the coniferous. In ancient times, a Bigfoot probably could have roamed through all of them. I mean, it would have maybe had to contend with Native American tribes or something, but now it's like we have a giant metropolis in the middle of the state. The whole southern state is farming and prairie. There are woods, but I don't think it's enough to sustain a population of Bigfoot. There's only really one section of the state, the northern coniferous zone, which could sustain a Bigfoot. Now, those Bigfoots, they're not going to mate with a Bigfoot in Florida or, you know, or wherever. It's like, I see them as kind of stuck there, and, you know, when things get stuck, the genetics, you know, become more inbred, and you have more problems, and that's part of the reason why I think they're on their way out. It's not necessarily that we don't have the viable habitat. We just have patches of it, and they're kind of stuck there. I mean, if they're going to try and cross Minnesota, they're screwed. So that's just at least in this state. You know, whereas Florida, you guys got those big Everglades. That's pretty spread out. I suppose there's some. And I think that could cause the different looks, I suppose, then over time, because you get so many different, you know, descriptions of Bigfoot. Red hair,
but I mean,
black hair.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was in the Army, I was a military policeman. I was an Army cop, so I, you know, investigated a lot of stuff, not Bigfoot and stuff. But I found that a lot of times some people just, you know, mistaken identity. And a lot of things I noticed was height, especially at night. So, you know, sometimes they would think this animal was a lot taller than they, you know, really thought it was. And
kind of like a fish,
you know,
story.
Fear amplifies the size of anything.
And, you know, at night, too, you know, with flashlights and stuff, so sometimes things look a lot taller than they are. I mean, you know, and not taking into account Stacy's video, which is a thermal, and you can clearly see the height of the animal, especially if you go stand next to it and recreate it. I mean, that was the thing that really kind of went, holy cow, that thing really is tall, you know, is when me and the wife did the recreation.
Does thermal add any height to the subject?
Actually, that's one thing that I don't like about thermal is because you can't get a depth. The only thing that we had to go by is those two trees are still located out there.
Okay.
You know, if you have something as a reference, you know, you can see what it is. But out in a big field, you know, you can't really tell, you know, how close. In fact, my wife and me, we were with when I was joking. I mean, what happened was I thought there was a gigantic pig standing in front of me. Come to find out, I was pointing the thermal at an armadillo, and she started laughing at me. I said, "Oh man, there's a gigantic pig!" And she said, "No, it's a little armadillo in front of you." And I pulled him up and looked, and went, "Oh my God!" You know, because I couldn't tell, you know, how far it was from the camera.
Well, there's a learning curve with learning to use new technology.
Oh, it's definitely getting better. This was one I used on a Bifro trip with Matt Moneymaker. He had some system that is a weird looking thermo that you wore the camera on top of this helmet with a backpack, and you know, it was neat and we're using it, but again, you know, you just couldn't tell how far things were in front of you. You could see the heat source.
Right.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, they're great, and I mean, like I said, technology's catching, the flares are getting a lot better, you know, and then, you know, someday down the road, I hope to own one.
Do you see they're going to have one for an iPhone, that they're going to have a flare attachment, $400. And
I tell you, I hope they do, and I hope it works, you know, as well as they say it does, because I tell you, when I was using Stacy's out there, those things are awesome. I mean, you can go out to a field and just scan a field, and you can see exactly what's out there.
That's sweet.
I think that's what it is. You know. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So you think they're primarily nocturnal? I mean, those are great tools at night, but what do we got to do to go find one in the day?
Well, again, I'm going to go off the Florida thing. And I think what here in Florida, that, you know, because we're so hot during the day, that these animals actually go into the swampy area. We have these things called hammocks. And it's a thick area where, you know, the canopy is so high, I mean, sometimes places you almost need like a flashlight to walk around it, even in the daytime. And if these areas stay nice and cool, and I think this, the animals, because of the, you know, the fur and all that, that they stay in these areas where it's nice and cool. And, you know, when at nighttime, when it, you know, sun goes down, it cools off, that's when they start to roam around. Plus, they don't have to worry about running into humans with guns. I think they just, you know, understand that, you know, humans are can be the, you know, are not good things to run into. Especially here in Florida.
So they retreat deeper.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest. I don't take a firearm with me. I take bear mace. And fortunately, I've inherently, I mean, walked in some private property, and had the Fish and Wildlife guy come up on me. And you know, if I had a gun with me, I would have been charged with poaching. But the fact that all I had was bear mace, and they asked me what I was doing, I told them I'm out Bigfoot hunting, which that totally took them off guard when I told them I was doing that. They went ahead and let me. They more or less let me go.
I wondered how that would go. That was always a question I had if someone were to be out Bigfoot hunting and they would, you know, happen to come upon law enforcement of some sort. Do they admit they're Bigfoot hunting or do they say something else?
Well, I didn't know really what to say. Here I was out, you know, with my family. They're just like, what are you guys doing out here, you know? And I just said, all right, I'm Bigfoot hunting, okay? I admit it. And they said,
yeah,
are you sure? And they just like, did you ever see it? Have you seen it? And I said, no, not yet. I said, oh, yeah, well, we're not allowed to talk about it. I said, yeah, I know. That's why I ain't going to ask you about it.
Yeah. I guess it's better to tell the truth. I just always had in my mind that if I were going to be somewhere, I would say that I was surveying wildlife. But Bigfoot hunting is probably...
I'm legend tripping, man.
Yeah. Bigfoot hunting or... legend tripping, that's probably going to land you in less trouble because, you know, wildlife research or something like that would be, you know, probably questionable.
Well, like I said, it's only happened twice, and I'm a little bit more careful about where I go walking around now. And like I said, I don't want to, you never know, because, I mean, they can still fine you for trespassing. So.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, the area that we go now, we just, you know, it's pretty much, you know, we just park our cars and then we just go walking in there. And we get there early in the morning. Last time we got out there about 3:30. Only problem we ran into was mosquitoes. But we went walking for a ways. And then, you know, when the sun started coming up, we worked our way back to the car. And, you know, we did hear some things walking around, but I can't, you know, honestly say that it was a skunk ape. I wish it was. I mean, I wish I could tell you that it was, but... you know, we didn't get a good look at it, whatever it was that was back there.
Interesting. Well, we're reaching the top of the hour, so we're going to take a quick break. And then we'll be back with more with Robert Robinson, the ghost monster hunter, the legend tripper, and we'll give away some free stuff. So sit tight. We'll be right back.
Put your lights on.
legend tripper great himself, visit. Robert Robinson. We got a couple things to give away. We got one of Robert's books and one of your T-shirts.
Yes, it's a large Legend Tripper T-shirt. I had them made when I was going on promotional tours, and I only have a few left.
Nice. And for those of you who want to check out Robert's site, it's legendtrippersofamerica.blogspot.com, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. All right, well, let's get to it then. For a winner of the copy of Legend Trippers, which is a one-of-a-kind book,
John, is that going to be autographed?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
I guess he's going to have to himself.
Oh, cool.
It'll get the
Shannon L. Shannon L., congratulations.
Woo-hoo.
You are the winner of Legend Trippers.
Very cool. Thanks for being in the
yes.
chat room. And thanks for the prize. That's awesome. Do you still have some of your T-shirts on the website?
I'm sorry?
Do you still have some of your T-shirts on the website?
I don't think. I mean, I've pretty much been taking the shirts out with me.
Gotcha.
I do have. Like I said, I have about four left.
Oh.
I had them. Like I said, I had the Legend Tripper logo copyrighted and trademarked. So
cool.
And then and I just wanted to see what a shirt would look like. I had a buddy of mine. In fact, he's the one who helped me design the whole logo. And he made me up some T-shirts, and I was taking them out when I was doing some book signing, and I was giving out a couple T-shirts. So these things are, you know, the symbol is trademarked, so nobody else can use them.
Nice.
Very cool. Okay, well, let's give away a shirt then. Let the random thing picker do its work here. And the winner is... Richard P. Woo! Free
so
shirt.
We need your shipping information, guys, so that we can get you out your prizes. So you can go ahead and hit the Facebook page, hit Johnny up, or hit me up, or Crystal, and we can get that information so you get your stuff. Your very rare T-shirt. One of five
yeah.
in existence. With all legends, there might be a little exaggeration.
Awesome.
Well, I've had compliments on the shirts. People like them.
Cool.
Nice. That's cool. You got it trademarked and all that.
Yeah, I had to. You made me a sticker. I put the sticker on my Jeep on the front, and. You know, I have a big yellow Jeep with that, you know, Legend Tripper sticker on the hood, and I came into the Jeep place to get them to, you know, do an oil change, and I caught the guy looking over at my car, you know, the Jeep, and he's looking at it. He goes, "Is that the Legend Tripper Jeep?" And I said, "Well, I said it's got a Legend Tripper sticker on." He goes, "We've had people come in and ask him. They think it's some special model Jeep, you know, and they ask where they can get one." I said, "Well, you don't tell Jeep that they want to pay me money for that sticker, by all means."
I'm sure there's somebody from the Jeep company manufacturers listening to Monster X. You know where? So get a hold of us so we can get that Legend Tripper Jeep made. I'm ready to trade mine in. I trade it for a Legend Tripper.
Especially equipped for the Florida swamps.
I don't always come for the skunk cake, but when I do, I use the Legend Tripper.
So now, where can people get your book if they want to check it out?
Well, it's available on eBay, and it's also available at my website. And, you know, when they go on there, they'll just look. You'll see the cover of the book. They'll click on it, and they can order it. And all the books come personally signed. And, you know, I also sometimes put the Bigfoot stamp I put in, or I have my Legend Tripper stamp I put in there, too. And
awesome.
Also Ripley's has it in their gift shop. Yeah, Ripley's, believe it or not.
Oh.
Oh, that's neato. Is that down in Florida?
Actually, they have it in the Ripley's, believe it or not, in Times Square has it, and the Ripley's in Williamsburg.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, Ripley's has been kind enough just to where there's doing a little trial run to see how they work out there, and they're looking at maybe putting them in some of their other gift shops.
Cool. We have a Ripley's on the Oregon coast in Newport, so.
Well, I do talk a little bit about Ripley's. I'm a big Ripley's fan. And, you know, part of being, you know, as a kid I was into that whole TV show In Search Of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back in the 70s, Ripley's used to have a museum in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, called World of the Unexplained. And it was basically just for, you know, and you know, the unexplained stuff like Bigfoot and stuff like that. And they had a Bigfoot statue in there when you first walked in. And it was one of the only museums that, you know, even acknowledged Bigfoot. And unfortunately, it closed down in, I think it closed in 76. And, you know, it just left a real big impact on me as a kid. I always remembered that museum. And I did a little bit of, and I managed to save a couple items of it when I was a kid, like the pamphlet and a sticker and a souvenir book. So, and when I contacted Ripley's, I told them I wanted to mention it in my book. They, you know, they were all for it.
Oh, cool. I used to love that show.
Yeah, in fact, it was really neat when you first went in. They had a little TV monitor, and none other than Leonard Nimoy would come on and introduce the World of the Unexplained to you before you even went into the museum.
The Ripley's in Newport, Oregon, right in their entryway, they have a giant Bigfoot.
In fact, that Bigfoot that you're talking about, that was the one that used to be in the World of the Unexplained.
Oh, it is? Cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, they even got a huge...
They have the big... Ripley's has their big warehouse in Orlando, and I got to go in there, and then this is a big... It almost looks like that warehouse at the end of the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, yeah.
And they have all the stuff that they ship out to all the different, you know, what they call them auditoriums. And I do know I was in there talking to them, and they said that they had shipped that one over, and they said that, you know, that went up north somewhere.
Hmm.
Wait, I've seen it. I've had a sighting.
Yes. They have a smaller one still in their warehouse, but it's not in nowhere as big as the one that's up there.
Someone in the chat room was... Someone in the chat room was wondering what other cryptids do you cover in the book?
I basically call it carry them all. Talk about... in fact, I even make a comment about some of the... I break them all down. You know, we got the hairy monsters, Bigfoot. We have the lake monsters, river monsters. We have the flying humanoids, like, you know, the Mothman and the Jersey Devil. And we have the, what they call, I even address werewolves, which I said I don't know really what where to put them at. I kind of gave them their own category. But, I you know, and when I was over in... up north, visiting my wife's family up in the Pennsylvania area, she took me over to the Pine Barrens, and we went walking around that area looking for the Jersey Devil.
Nice. That's supposed to be a creepy area, huh?
It, actually, it is. I mean, that area looks scary in the daytime.
Nice. Yeah. Did someone have a sighting out there? That's someone famous. I'm not sure. I just thought someone in the Bigfoot community had a sighting out that way, but...
Well, believe it or not, a lot of people have said that they've kind of come to the conclusion thinking that maybe the Jersey Devil might in fact be a Bigfoot, just a misidentification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that.
Well, maybe all the Bigfoot sightings are moth action mouth fed.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I mean, you know, we have the South Carolina lizard man. And, you know, some people have come to the conclusion that it may not, you know, be a lizard man, but actually, again, a misidentification might be a Bigfoot instead.
Bigfoot walking out of the swamp covered in seaweed.
Well, I mean, we've had that down here with the skunk ape. People have seen it, and it's got like a greenish tint to it. It could be some of the molded and stuff that some of these animals pick up down here living in this, you know, this really wet tropical environment.
Yeah, slap that stuff on you to stay cool.
Well, even the South Monster over in Arkansas, it's actually supposedly, you know, got a kind of a greenish tint to it as well, being out there in the bayous and stuff in of Arkansas.
Yeah, we seem to have a mix here. You get your reddish reports, you get your darker ones, a couple old reports of white ones. Which would serve well here, since it's... Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, I mean, one of the things I've proposed that, you know, the ones that people actually see might actually be a young one who just hasn't really developed a fear of humans, or an older one that just isn't, you know, as fast as the elder ones and just, you know, can't quite move as quick as the when he was in his younger days.
Mm-hmm. White ones work good here because there's snow on the ground half the year.
I remember as a kid watching Johnny Quest with the Yeti, and I always for a long time thought the Yeti was actually had white fur.
That's a friend of mine that's from northern Minnesota. He said he grew up to kind of folklore and tales of a Yeti that they'd tell around the campfire up there. And now, I asked him, I was like, well, what area was that? And I ended up doing some research, and there had been Bigfoot sightings in that area around the same years. Him and his buddies would sit around the campfire and hear these stories from the older guys. So, you know, I think that's what's interesting and fun about all this, is you're just connecting the dots and, you know, putting things together. No experts or pros yet.
Well, I mean, when it comes to the Yeti, I don't, you know, this, Dr. Brian Sykes said that, you know, this animal is actually an extinct polar bear. And, you know, my whole thing is, what if he didn't get the right DNA? I mean, are these people 100% sure that what they had was Yeti DNA or some DNA they found out somewhere that they think might be a Yeti DNA?
Yeah, I don't think it eliminates the possibility.
No, it doesn't.
Of an actual Yeti.
I mean, these, you know, Sherpas and all that have swore up and down that, you know, the animal that's out there is bipedal and, you know, and ape-like. And, you know, they've got drawings of it. And, you know, it doesn't look anything like a polar bear. So, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, his DNA doesn't prove that there's a polar bear. I mean, an extinct polar bear isn't running out there. I mean... They've all been said there's bears out there in Nepal and all that. All I'm saying is that, you know, are they 100% sure that the DNA he had is really from a real one, or what the, you know.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to know if this ancient bear was able to walk bipedally.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they do, you know, here in Florida when I, you know, they're seen and I, you know, I've had, you know, I've talked to some people that have seen them. You know, they said they've all been running on all four legs. You know, they may stand up and look around and walk a little bit, but when they're, you know, get into that mode where they take off, they get on all fours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, hopefully Sykes will continue to be involved, and we'll be able to get some, I guess you'd say, better DNA or more relevant DNA.
Yeah. Oh, I hope so. I think that would definitely, you know, I think that would definitely help. Definitely get some good stuff to, you know.
We got Todd Disitel involved. I know he's definitely game, and I know Stacy's been working with him, and Stacy's got his DNA dart gun now.
Which apparently has a, because the question came up as like, most dart guns, or like trank guns, or those DNA dart guns, have a really short firing range. And Stacy's apparently has a 300-yard range. He's been playing with it because there's some, you know, there's some arc to the projectile. But, he's got one that will do the job. He also has, of course, wants to record video of him because just, you know, there's been DNA that's come back as an unknown primate.
Yes.
So until you have a kite specimen or somebody can actually videotape, his idea is kind of cool because videotaping them while you're doing it, you know, that's pretty compelling. Of course, there'll still be people that will argue the point, I'm sure, first of all, it's a big task to find one to dart and photograph at the same time. But I wish him luck.
I do, too. I mean, I do think, bottom line, they're going to have to produce some kind of a specimen for everybody to see and look at, you know. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not going to be the one who shoots one. I mean, I want to see it. I want to photograph it. But I'm not going to kill an animal like that. It's just not the way I was raised to go kill an animal needlessly like that.
Well, I think there's only really two ways to prove it. One, I mean, either a type specimen, a body, live or dead, or a long-term study where it's documented with DNA and photographs and, you know, multiple DNA samples, multiple clear, and I will put that in, emphasize, photographs, but the light, you know, that's all. Both of those are tough calls. If it was easy, it'd been done already.
True.
Well, like I said, I do understand where they're coming from about, you know, needing a specimen. I mean, even Dr. Jeff Meldrum said, you know, bottom line, we need a specimen. But he didn't say, everybody grab a gun, let's go out and shoot one of these things. Because, I don't know, it's just... Like, you know, you said there may not be that many of them around, and
yeah,
at the same time,
they could go extinct before we prove it.
But
I think it's all.
They don't care at all.
It'd be cool.
Yeah, you're right. It's kind of a selfish desire, isn't it?
That's a human-driven need to know that they exist.
Yeah.
It is not. Bigfoot does not care to be proven, or else they just walk in, you know, they'd make it easy.
True.
Well, like I said, I wouldn't mind, you know, being able to capture one, you know, alive, and maybe, you know, they could look at it and not, you know, kill the animal and figure out what it is and, you know, study it even better. Just, you know, look at it, how it functions and how it walks and how it does things and how it eats. You know, kind of like that old movie Iceman where they found that old distinct Neanderthal man in a block of ice, and they thawed it out, and they, you know, were watching it. But, you know, I mean, that's an ideal thing, is just to capture it, look at it, study it, and then, you know, prove it does exist.
Wasn't that Pauly Shore that was the Neanderthal man? I think
he's
up for an Oscar for that.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we've got a caller. Let's take a 303. You're on MXR.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. I just wanted to call in because I think a point may need to be clarified about what Sykes found with the bear. I don't think that Sykes studies ever set out to disprove Yeti or say that Yeti was, in fact, an extinct bear. I think what happened was is that he was sent a hair sample that came back as this extinct species of bear, which opens up a whole new, rather interesting, you know, point about, you know, when you study searching for one thing, you find another. And I think that a lot of people who believe in Bigfoot take that, you know, they think that that was his point. And I never from that show got the impression that Sykes started or had any intent of disproving Yeti. He just got a hair sample that came back as this bear. And I think he gets kind of taken the wrong way a lot. So I just wanted to call in and mention that.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, he was studying hair sample.
People kind of take it personally or...
I think people were pretty happy. So, yeah, people that really wanted that to be, you know, the holy grail of that was going to prove Bigfoot were, it just goes to the Bigfoot community and how anytime some, that's why Rick Dyer was able to keep, to perpetuate a second hoax, because people are so emotionally attached to having one proven that there's enough people that will give attention as soon as somebody says, you know, I got a Bigfoot in a box.
Yeah, it's a very interesting phenomenon. Just the people surrounding it and the need to believe for some people. And
yeah, it borders on religious, you know, on Bigfoot religion. But I'm sure that also takes, you know, I'm sure there's those people in other paranormal phenomena. Don't you run into that, Richard? Or is Bigfoot unique? Bigfooters are unique in their
Robert.
Planet. Robert, I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you. I was just saying, who's Richard?
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I mean, as far as the caller is, I mean, yeah, I realize that, you know, Sykes was, you know, just examining what is, but and maybe it isn't just the way Sykes is, but as far as that TV show goes, every sample he was given, he was able to, you know, disprove it had anything to do with Bigfoot. And maybe it was just the way the direction that particular TV show was going and not
well,
maybe...
Why is that the fault of the hair samples that were sent? If the guy didn't get any Bigfoot samples... Why should he go on TV and say he got Bigfoot samples? Why can't he just he made an open call for hair samples, correct?
Well, from my understanding, he was, you know, they put a call out for what they thought was Bigfoot hair samples for him to examine.
Right. So he took those hairs and he tested them and he reported back on what he found. There seems to be
wrong.
This automatic bias
right.
That because he didn't find Bigfoot, he was intentionally trying to railroad the idea of the Yeti.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, all I'm saying is the way the show went. It's just that what he took back and what he verified was that there is an extinct polar bear in Tibet. My thing is, the person or whoever brought him that hair, that is what the people, I'm saying... how are they so sure that it was a Yeti hair?
Yeah, unless they plucked
it. Not Brian Sykes. Sykes did what he was supposed to
well,
do. He took
weren't.
It, he analyzed it, and, you know, he said it was, you know, now we know that there is now an extinct, what we thought was an extinct bear out there. My problem is with the person that brought it to him. You know, he needs to be, you know, I really wish he had really been a little bit more sure of himself before bringing that hair to him to be examined. That's all
I'm
saying.
Well, how can you be sure of any hair sample came from Bigfoot, you know, or Yeti? You know, you
well,
collect the sample and
you know,
get it tested.
Unless you jump on its back and you rip its hair and then take off running because you know this sucker's going to be pissed if you yank some of its hair off. You know, you're never going to, you know.
But no, that's, yeah, he got hair samples, you know, what context were the hairs collected? Well, all the, and my understanding is there was actually a screening process that all the samples were not used in the study. So I don't know if they ever plan what happened to the discarded or set aside samples, if they will ever see the light of day or be, you know. But in this, in a small sample of hairs, of random hairs sent into one individual that actually went through the process of DNA, no Bigfoot samples were found. And an interesting side note is there was a sample came back as a previously thought to be extinct polar bear. That's it. It wasn't like, you know, and I don't know how it, what filter it went through for the television program. Because we all know that this finding Bigfoot is not scripted at all. It's totally random, and everything that happens is nothing of its plan. And I'm being facetious. All TV shows seem to have like an angle when they start, you know, a premise when they start out, and it's scripted. It's not. People think that TV, because it's on TV, it is equate reality TV is a misnomer. It's scripted.
Well, back in 2010, me and my wife, we were on that TV show, Wife Swap.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, there's no such thing as reality TV.
That is
in fact, all our
well, come on, guys. What he did was not a reality TV show, and it wasn't Wife Swap. You know, it could have been entertainment, but this whole thing of trying to make him out to be a bad guy because the show didn't find Bigfoot, you know, or didn't prove the Yeti, isn't something that you should be attacking the guy for or feel bad. You know, they took what they had and they ran with it.
Well, yeah,
yeah,
which is better
prove,
than
it,
we've
it,
had
it
done
prove,
before.
It didn't prove Yeti and it didn't disprove it. So, you know,
well,
the
I,
thing
I,
is that
I
they found this bear that nobody thought existed anymore, and that, you know, so they took that. You know, would you rather have them do another 30 minutes on all the other samples that came back that weren't Bigfoot and tell you what those were, or have them spend 30 minutes telling you about this great new discovery that did come of the hair samples that were sent in?
No, I think what you're saying is right. I think there was a shoot the messenger thing. I think it was a case of shoot the messenger. We didn't get the result we wanted. We wanted Bigfoot to be proof. Of course, it's also a vocal minority that jumped on Sykes. It's not the vast majority that people did not. I don't fault him for the results of the DNA. I think he had a process. It's a start. Maybe we'll have a Bigfoot hair sample show up at some point and will be processed through DNA. Maybe somebody's got one sitting in their freezer right now. You know,
yeah, it was a major breakthrough just to have science work with the Bigfoot community.
Right. I don't think anybody here is jumping on Brian Sykes.
But yeah, it didn't disprove it, but it kind of lowered the odds in my opinion. Especially if this bear could walk bipedally.
No. You think it lowered
the odds?
I mean, lowered
it as a Yeti, not as a... Not talking about the Bigfoot in North America.
Yeah.
Talking about the odds of an actual Yeti. I mean, because like we were talking earlier, things can get blown out of proportion. Stories get exaggerated. If you see a bear you've never seen before walking on two legs, I mean, it's going to be a formidable sight. I don't know if they did walk on two legs. I don't know enough about this ancient hybrid bear.
Right.
Well, that was the thing that no one seemed to be able to elaborate on, the fact that the Yeti and the ancient polar bear may be completely separate in the study, whereas
exactly.
in Sykes' study, Justin Smea's account came back, his hair came back, North American black bear. That is not everyone's idea now that Bigfoot is a North American black bear. And I think that the same thing should or could be said for Sykes' analysis of the supposed Yeti hair coming back as an ancient polar bear, meaning they found hair that is that belongs to this ancient polar bear. I'm not convinced that what they're saying is this ancient polar bear is in fact what they perceive to be as the Yeti.
Yeah,
I think
well,
they're completely separate.
It certainly was spun that way in the media, but it is it doesn't even the argument doesn't mean one or the other. I have 10 hairs. I tested them. One came back as a previously thought to be extinct animal. That doesn't preclude any other animal from existing. It just says
right.
this hair came from this. It doesn't, you know, that doesn't explain it because that's not the only. If we were just going by hair, first of all, to find Justin's hair, he went back to the site after, you know, months later. If he had plucked the hair from the one he reportedly shot, we may have a very different story. But, you know, that was not the case. I could go back to an area that I saw a Bigfoot in, and know that I saw a Bigfoot and find a hair that belonged to a deer or an elk or any other animal. So,
and then it would, but it wouldn't mean that the Bigfoot that you had seen
right,
is a
exist.
Deer.
Right, exactly, Crystal.
And I think that's where, and also I know that there was a paper released on the study, but I still think that it's unknown. Someone may know where the samples came from, but I'm unaware of it. I asked the question a million times, and for some reason, every way I worded the question, it was taken out of context and nobody understood me. I felt like I was speaking in a foreign language, but this very subject, I had such a hard time conveying what I was trying to ask or gather information about. So where was this sample that tested positive for the prehistoric polar bear? Where did it come from? Whose was it? Who?
Right. Where did they find it? I mean,
right.
I'm sure there was more information because a hair by itself, it needs context. You know, I find hair in my shower, but I doubt that we'll find a Sasquatch hair in my shower.
Oh, that would suck.
Another point I'd like to bring up is that someone had mentioned that there were other samples that were included that weren't part of the show, and maybe that is somehow dubious as to maybe an actual, you know, better sample that may have been a Yeti hair may have been excluded deliberately. And I think that misses the point that, you know, Bigfoot and Yeti and cryptids in general are huge cash cows for these networks. Do you really think that a network would not want to have a 4-hour special about how they sponsored Sykes and he actually found a Yeti? They would go nuts.
That's
so,
a very good point.
There's
yeah,
no, you know, to
mine.
Say that there's bias right off the bat that the show started off on the foot to not find Yeti is really, you know, I don't know where that comes from, that these animals are discovered, it would be the greatest zoological find
of
the century, and
those
no one
samples.
No TV network is sitting on an actual Bigfoot sample and not saying it, not testing it, or not releasing the results, you know, for some conspiracy theory reason. You know, they would want the money, or, you know,
yeah,
they want the notoriety. Whoever's sitting on it.
I didn't say that. What I said was there was more hair samples than what they tested. I don't
people
know what
have
the motivation
said that though.
Was. Yeah, they're because of they could only do so many hair samples.
Yeah,
right.
Some of those could have been contaminated. Some of those could have been from the person who sent them in.
He could have looked at them and
get the best,
said right off
the
bat they weren't
get the
even
best samples that they could pass.
Right.
Not
the
that
there's always a conspiracy.
Can I
chime in on this on something?
Sure.
But I'm not mistaken, and I'm not 100% sure. That show came on Nat Geo. That's correct, right? National Geographic Channel?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. It was aired in England first, and then it was brought over here and aired later.
Well, I do know, and I've talked to people from Nat Geo, they're very anti-cryptozoology. Back in the 70s, National Geographic invested a lot of money and equipment over in Loch Ness. And unfortunately, they didn't catch anything, so they got really bitter, and they've gotten on the anti cryptozoology thing. If you watched a lot of the shows on there,
I can't buy that. The money to be earned in proving it is larger than any spiteful network executive being upset that they didn't find Loch Ness.
I could actually argue that there will be there could be people with an agenda that don't think that it's a good idea that it's proven. And there's a bunch of people that log for a living that I'm pretty sure would have an agenda for not, and there is, I know of people that don't share stories. So there can be people with agendas other than, hey, we're going to make money from proving it to be the case. But that's not what I said at all. My understanding, there was more hair samples than were actually tested. Some of them weren't tested. For whatever reason, I'm not saying because they did them and they came out with Bigfoot.
Were they tested and they just weren't worthy of the show?
Discard them.
Exactly.
I thought there was a vetting process that because of how they were, where they had come from, their number of hairs, I think they tried to pick out the best samples they thought were testing.
There was. I thought I had read somewhere there were, 37 sent in and, 13 excluded for whatever reason. And I could have those numbers wrong. Maybe there were 37 tested. But I and it might have been due to reasons of the show. But I don't believe that it was to be deceptive in any way. I don't personally believe that.
Well,
I felt
it's easy to look that way when you don't get the answers you want. There's
right.
People
I feel
are hungry.
Like there were people who wanted different answers, and because they didn't get it, they, resorted.
They're looking at and taking things out of context. But it's easy because just like our caller is took something that I said out of context. And took that to mean that I was saying it was a conspiracy, that they may have had an agenda. I mean, they may have had a conclusion. First of all, the odds that they were going to find conclusive proof from hair was already low to begin with. So it's actually pretty cool that they found something unusual in those hair samples.
No one seemed to be impressed with that. Where I was. That was pretty impressive, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. Like that.
And
hey,
no one else was. They want Bigfoot. And if there's no Bigfoot, it's no dice.
I'd have to frame that again as what we heard from the people that were negative, that the vocal minority are the ones that, were upset. That I think anybody who gives it any thought would realize that the likelihood of them having a Bigfoot hair in that sampling was infinitesimally low.
Well, we should say Yeti, because he was, testing Himalayan, Asian samples and not North American samples for that show. Right.
Well, hopefully people can up the bar and get something else going and find some samples, because these things are pretty hairy.
And there's also another call out right currently. Dr. Meldrum is requesting hair samples from whoever, I guess. So, it's not as if people, it's sad because I think that some people really do. They cry for science, and then they shoot it down whenever it comes back with answers that aren't up to their.
People went in with an expectation that the first time that a widely publicized DNA study of hairs, where they were actually looking to see if any of them were from an unknown primate, was going to yield, you know, the results we'd all like to see. You're hanging your, you know, if that your expectation was that one time was going to do it, you know, you need to get into reality, because we were talking today about people going out and using thermal imaging, and that is actually, there's how many, you know, thousands of hours now people have spent out in the field looking with the purpose of looking for Bigfoot, and that it doesn't yield a lot of results. There are some interesting thermals, but it's a needle. Now go find a hair.
Yeah.
Go wander in the woods and find a hair. I look all the time. I don't find hairs yet.
Well, hopefully you will. How about you, Robert? Have you run across any hair, or you got any expeditions planned for the near future?
Oh, yeah, we got one coming up. Now that it's starting to cool off a little bit, we're definitely going to start. Myself, Tim Pisano, and Kevin, we're going to be looking at, we're going to get some crew together. My wife's coming. We're going to get some canoes, and we're going to go on down, and we're hoping that maybe, you know, canoeing down the river at night might, you know, eliminate some noise and stuff of vehicles, and we may, you know, because these animals obviously have to drink, you know, and the rivers are pretty much the area where they, you know, are going to come down to drink at. So we're hoping that going around the rivers around at night, we may be able to hopefully see one. And, you know, it's, you know, like the caller said, you know, the hairs, and, you know, I'll jump on back on one of these skunk capes, I'll rip out some hair, and I'll give them to Brian Sykes, and we'll have another show, and maybe, you know.
Well, I hope you videotape that.
I'm sorry?
I hope you videotape that.
Yeah, hopefully
Fasano will
have the camera on you.
Yeah. Well, let that caller know. I do actually have a very high respect for Mr. Sykes, and I appreciate him doing his work and all. Like I said, I just wish that whoever had brought the samples to him had brought some better samples. That's all, because I mean, it's great that we did find a prehistoric bear that's out there, and maybe it will dispel some of the Yeti. But just looking at some of the drawings that I've seen of this animal, I just think there is something more to it than just a polar bear out there, and we keep up the research. Hopefully we will get some better hair samples that will yield some better results and, you know, verify that these animals are out there.
And the thing is, it's a start. I mean,
thank you,
Dr. Sykes, for taking that on. I mean,
yes, we know you're listening.
More of that, I know, we know you listen to Monster X, so...
So we want to give
a
shout out to you.
We have a large fan base. We have Megan Fox, Brian Sykes.
Very diverse. They turn in, they hear Robert, not us, but.
That's awesome. Yeah, I was happy to see you working with Tim and Kevin, and like I said, you seem to have some good skills and ability from your past, being in the service, and I mean, I don't know that much about your background, but a little I do know, seems like you got a lot of skills, and it also seems like you've met a lot of well-known figures in the crypto world.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was in the military for 21 years as a military policeman. I was over in Afghanistan right after 9/11. Retired in 2003, moved to Florida. One of the reasons that I wanted to explore the whole skunk ape thing. I had got some friends who told me about it. So I've been living down there here ever since. I've teamed up with some pretty interesting people. I've been on a couple When I first got down here to Florida, I hooked up with Matt Moneymaker and went on a couple Bifro trips. And then I met Scott Marlowe. Yeah, I met Scott Marlowe. I went out with him. And then 2010, me and the wife did Wife Swap, and I did that strictly for the reason of getting my name out there and no other reason. So I have to admit, that whole thing did not pan out the way I thought it was going to. You know, I was watching, a big fan of that TV show, Destination Truth and all that, and I pretty much thought that's how it was going to work its way out. So, but anyway, I mean, it was fun doing the show. I didn't like the finished result, but, you know, again, I did it to get my name out there. And then, you know, I hooked up with some other people. I met Stacy Brown and David Lauer, and I did a couple hunts with them, and, you know, really, really enjoyed going out with those guys. And then, you know, finally hooked. I was friends with Tim for a long time on Facebook. We just never hooked up. And then finally, through Kevin, we all got together, and we started going out and looking, and we found out we all kind of had the same theory of this animal. And now we're just putting more people out there looking versus just, you know, going out there with just my wife and stuff.
So just to be clear, Robert, you being on Wife Swap is no reflection on your spouse.
Well, I tell you, to be honest with you, my wife didn't even want to do the show. When they initially called us about it, she was dead set about not, you know, she even said, you know, this show is not Destination Truth, Rob. It's a family show. And to be honest with you, you husbands usually don't fare too well on the show. And I said, no, come on. I've never been on TV. I want to try this. I think this could be good, you know. And she finally, after I sunk my, you know, kicked around and pouted along, that she said, fine, I'll do it, but I'm doing this under protest. So I called them back and said, yeah, we'll do it. So, you know, they showed up, and, you know, and the thing was, our Bigfoot hunt, they only went down the road. They went down to these, they didn't want to really go out there and look around.
We just need some most people.
That kind of opened my eyes about reality TV, about, you know, we didn't really go into an area where there was any Bigfoot signs. It was just down the road where, in fact, we went to an area where a bunch of kids go ATVing all the time. You know? So I was a little disappointed when it came to that.
Life is full of learning opportunities.
Well, I'm going to have to watch the episode because I haven't seen it.
I actually did see the episode. My family said, hey, there's a... because we... we'll watch Wife Swap when it's running on reruns and stuff time to time. And they said, hey, we watched an episode and there was actually a Bigfoot family on. I said, no way. And they said, yeah, we recorded it for you. And that was actually back in June it had aired. And so I watched that one night. So I did actually see your episode of Wife Swap.
So, and just to clear up, when Crystal says there was a Bigfoot family on Wife Swap.
Let me elaborate. In June, I watched a human family who hunts Bigfoot on Wife Swap.
We were actually supposed to be the legend tripping family on the show, but they didn't want to go with that. I mean, my wife did a ghost hunt and all that, but that part didn't air. In fact, you will see a portion of a ghost hunt at the very end in the credits.
At the very end, yes, I did, and I believe they actually referred to you in the details or the information as a monster hunting family.
Yes, they didn't want to go with legend tripping.
Okay.
Very nice. And speaking of the paranormal, aren't you doing something called the Paranormal Kicks Cancer next month?
Yes. Well, that's going to be about the same time. Yeah, I guess it is next month. I'm sorry. I'm looking at my calendar now. Yes, I am. They're raising money for cancer. I did it last year. It's going on the same time as the Florida Skunk Ape convention, but I'm going to break free and run over to the paranormal. I'm going to do a presentation over there on legend tripping because they're doing it for a great cause, and I always like to be part of that, raising money for, for cancer. In fact, you know, like I said, my brother-in-law just died of cancer, so it only makes sense for me to definitely be proactive about it.
Nice. So that's a busy weekend for you.
Oh, I tell you, I like it. Like I said, I have a good time doing it. I like hanging out with people who really enjoy the same stuff I enjoy doing and just talking to them. Some of them tell me about some of the stuff they've seen, and it's just, it's kind of, it's just, like I said, when I'm out there with Tim and Kevin and we're out there, I enjoy hanging out with people that enjoy doing the same thing I like doing.
That's awesome. Yeah, it seems like you guys have a good group of guys down there in Florida, and you guys all work together and for the common goal, and that's good stuff,
man.
And
that's what we need more of.
Yeah.
Collaboration,
definitely.
Not competition.
Well, I appreciate you joining us, Robert. This has been a great experience.
Well, hey,
thanks,
thank
Robert.
You for having me on your show. I had a good time.
Yeah, thank you, Robert.
And anyone that wants to get his book or check out his website, you can go to legendtrippersofamerica.blogspot.com. Book is also on eBay.
And
we are going to have...
And let him know each book comes personally signed or autographed.
Yeah.
Get your
And we are going to... It's a great concept. Get people outside. Get the family doing a fun activity. I'm all for it.
Weekend. This message brought to you by Monster X Radio. The PSA announcement.
And it covers so many bases. You know, you go look for treasures this day. Next week, you can go look for Bigfoot. And so on.
And you can do it with your family.
Yeah, and we're going to have one of your cohorts on special Thursday show, Stacy Brown Jr. He's also got a busy schedule, so we won't be doing a Sunday show next Sunday. We will be doing a Thursday show with Stacy Brown. And, Robert, you're free to call in on that show as well.
And if you can't clear your calendar to listen to Monster X on Thursday, I don't know why, but you can go to the blog.radio Monster X and listen to all the archive shows anytime you want. So I've had a couple people ask me, well, I can't make it Sunday. Can I listen to it? Yes, you can. So you don't have to be disappointed.
Yeah. Listen on the archives. Is there anything else you'd like to say to our guest, Robert, before
the show ends here
in a couple minutes?
Thanks for having me on the show. Thanks for having me on the show. If you guys are, you know anybody who's looking to get their kids out and do something, get them away from video games and go on an adventure, you know, you can pick up my book. It's a very detailed book. I go into safety. I go into, I talk about... what they call critical thinking, you know. You may not believe in Bigfoot, but maybe your son does, and you say, as long as one of you believes in Bigfoot, hey, go on out and do it, you know. And, it's just, every time I go out with my family, you know, it's never a dull moment. We all have a good time. But I make sure we're safe about it. I make sure that, you know, we go out well planned. And I also make sure that I teach them not to break the law in any way.
Very nice. Sounds like a great deal.
So we've got Stacy Brown coming up. Who else is coming up, Johnny? Back to you, Johnny.
We got Linda Godfrey coming up August 31st. And we're going to have Katie Zahn on the show with her, telling her full account of when she encountered multiple dogmen with multiple people. She was featured on Monster Quest and passed a polygraph. And I talked to her, and she says she wants to get her full story out. It's been 10 years since the incident occurred. And I think she feels like she wants to clear a few things up, which were portrayed on the show. That should be really cool. And you can check our calendar out on monsterxradio.blogspot.com for shows we have upcoming in September. Thanks, everyone in the chat room, for joining us. Congrats again to Shannon for winning the book and for Richard for winning the shirt.
And for Robert for providing those things.
Yes. And for our friends over at Sasquatch Coffee. For providing us with such great coffee.
That's right. The world runs on Sasquatch Coffee.
Indeed it does. Well, we'll see you guys Thursday. Monster X out.
All right. Thanks, John. Thanks, Crystal. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.